What's going on, everybody? As always, I'll try to keep this intro as short as possible so you can hear more of my bud that you want to hear from and less of me. Today's guest is Sep Cuss. I've been racing with Sep since he started when he first kind of broke out at the Redlands Classic years ago on just the Harley Davidson team, which jumped him up after that incredible performance, winning on top of Oak Glen there. He jumped up to the Rally Pro Cycling team, and shortly after that, he jumped up to Jumbo Visma, which is one of the best teams in the world right now. Sep is a super cool guy and just a proper bud. He's the kind of guy where he is now one of the best pure climbers in the world of cycling. He is truly one of the best cyclists in the world right now. He won a stage of the Vuelta last year. The last time we raced against one of the best results I ever had was at the Tour of Alberta, and he beat me on that summit finish stage after the two of us basically just time trialed up the mountain at Marmot Basin in Alberta. We then raced against each other at the Tour of Utah, where he won that basically with one leg beaten up on all of us there, and some of the best names in the world. But through all of Sep's success, he has maintained just super humble, very laid back, hasn't got to his head at all. He's just such a cool, laid-back guy, which I'm sure you'll get from this podcast and hearing more of him. If you don't know who Sep is, I'm sure this will make you a fan of him. And if you are a fan of Sep, I hope I got to tell some stories that you hopefully haven't heard yet from him, or got some insight into Sep that hopefully you haven't heard before. Because obviously other journalists have covered him, but what I always try to do with these podcasts is cover stuff that you can't find so far on YouTube, because, I mean, these guys are close friends of mine, and I'm really fortunate to be able to learn some of these stories, so I just want to bring more of those out to you guys. Okay, I guess I'll let you enjoy Sep now. Okay, hey buddy, how's it going?
Oh, it's going well. Enjoying a nice evening here in Pichardo, Spain. It's been pretty relaxed the last few weeks here, or months, ever since the lockdown started. But everything's going pretty well. So time to take a little step back and enjoy the little things in life, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So you're in Andorra right now.
No, I'm in Spain. So where I am, it's like in the valley below Andorra.
Okay. And so yeah. you have a place there, and you have a place in Andorra, right?
So where I'm at right now is my girlfriend's place. Normally I'm in Girona or Andorra. So now I'm in between, I guess.
Okay,
but it's I really love it here. It's amazing riding, really quiet.
Sweet, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So yeah. Are you allowed to go outside right now?
Yeah, we can go outside. Let's see. It's starting on the 4th of this month. We were allowed to go outside. The stipulation is still that we stay within our province. And I think they just changed that to you have to stay within your sanitary area, they're calling it. So our region is like High Pyrenees. So all the towns in there, you're free to ride more or less freely in. But I think as of now, most of the amateur riders and so forth, they can only ride from 6 to 10 and 8 to 11. So yeah, there's still some pretty strict rules for recreational riders and runners and everything like that. So it's still pretty strict, I'd say.
And is it like legitimately enforced, or is this like soft rules, or do you have to write with a piece of paper that says where you live, or how are they enforcing this?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, yeah, you definitely encounter quite a few. Well, not. It depends on where you are, but for instance, right outside the roundabout, right outside our house, there's police So every time we drive out through the roundabout or go through, you have to have some documentation, things like that. So I've been stopped a few times saying, oh, are you a professional? Things like that. So if you show your license or the documentation from the sanitary department, then it's fine. But yeah, it's definitely enforced as far as I've seen.
Jeez. Because like I was staying with like one of my teammates is from Italy, and so he was locked down, like his whole town was locked down for a while. But like we were just saying, it's like, man, I'd lose my mind after like a day of being locked down and going out. Like, and I won't name him, but like there's another American rider, one of our friends, that said like he was locked down in France and just left after a bit, just went out and got fined and said he'd do it again if he could. Like he just couldn't stand to be indoors anymore. Like, were there guys just ignoring it and hoping not to get caught, like just going out at like 3 a.m. or like in an all black kit or anything like that?
I don't know of anybody that was ignoring it, really. I mean, a lot of my teammates have been in Andorra, and they were locked down for 7 weeks. Even now, they can only ride every other day on one section of road for 2 hours maximum.
Yeah, it's like the ongoing joke in all the cycling news things, what the Andorra guys have to do.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think, yeah, that's on one extreme, but for me, it was, you know, in the beginning, it was hard to wrap my head around the fact that I'd ride the trainer every day, be inside. But I think just like anything, you get used to it, and you appreciate what you can do. Yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine you getting used to riding indoors.
No, usually never before. I would never be able to do it. But yeah, I think 7 weeks straight riding indoors. You know, now I know I can do it, so that's a good thing. But
7 weeks, yeah, you were doing it.
Yeah, 7 weeks.
Oh Jesus, that's horrible.
Yeah, a lot of races on Zwift, and but, yeah, it was actually a lot more fun than I anticipated.
Yeah, I saw you won I heard you won some races on Zwift. Like, I have no idea what the Zwift racing was. Like, I like it would just pop up in the social media feeds once in a while, and then I saw like Sepp racing virtual road, and I'm like, he's got to be pulling his hair out right now.
Yeah, well, we have every Sunday we have a like race within the team, because the weeks before, we pretty much all the World Tour teams would do the digital Tour de Suisse.
Yep.
And I mean, that it's like you just, it's not really reliable, because you have everybody is on different smart trainers. You know, you're not sure if somebody's smart trainer is calibrated or not, or, you know, if they put in their correct weight.
You're getting dusted, you know, by like 40-year-old men that weigh 40 kilos.
Seen, like, yeah, exactly. So I think for a lot of guys, we did like our best hour long power or something, and you finish. I think the first one I did, I was like, 15 minutes behind. I don't know, what was it? Maybe
15 minutes behind.
10 minutes behind. 10 minutes behind the winner. And that one, I think I did my best 20-minute power ever. And then that one I didn't pace very well. And then the next one, because on this platform there's no drafting, so it's just a time. It's stupid. It's just a time trial. And then on the second one, I think I probably did my best hour power too, and was 8 minutes behind 15th
place.
I thought
you were supposed to do the tour this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like a time trial, so I'm not very, you know, if we're going with it as a time trial discipline, then it's my best result in the time trial, so we'll look at it on the positive side. But yeah, that's the thing. It's like, if you see that, then there's definitely some calibration, you know, discrepancies and stuff. But at the end of the day, it's good for the sponsors, and keeps people talking, and it's something new. So everybody needs to let out that competitive energy at some point somehow. So I think it was a fun way to do it, but yeah, a bit insane.
That's crazy, man. And I mean, yeah. So what is what's your opinion on what's going to happen for racing this year? Do you think there's going to be racing? Obviously you're supposed to be doing the tour this year. What do you think right now? That changes like every day, but as of like now.
Yeah, I think it's really complicated, but I think for myself, I'm just trying to stay positive. I mean, some people would call it maybe blind ignorance almost, but yeah, I think because nowadays all you see in the social media, everything is so much negativity. You know, people saying, oh, we're not going to see any sports for 2 years or things like this, which, yeah, that could be the case, but there's no use in already defeating yourself and saying, okay, yeah, it's all over, everything's gone to shit. You know, so yeah, I hope that things will happen, and yeah, hopefully people will start to be healthy, and the hospitals will be able to handle whatever new cases pop up. But yeah, I think a lot can happen in a few months.
And so the team still has you going for the tour this year.
I think that's the plan. I mean, yeah, it's a pretty complicated job now to figure out all the races, because there's so much that overlaps. But yeah, as far as I know, we're keeping with the same roster more or less. So yeah, it's good to have some motivation at the end of the tunnel, at least.
That's cool, man. And so are you someone who loves to train or loves to race more?
I think at the end of the day, train, just because I like to ride my bike. That's something that I remember more, or sticks with me more, is the weeks that I put in training, and you know, the process of getting better, that stays with me more than a race result or something like that. Yeah, because a lot of the times the races maybe don't go as well as you hope or something like that. So it's, you know, it's a rare moment where you're just really on it in a race. I mean, I love racing. I miss the adrenaline of it and everything. But yeah, the training's pretty, exciting, I guess.
So you're would your favorite kind of training days be like just the long adventure days, or do you rather do like the short intervals and explosiveness stuff?
It depends. I think for the most part, yeah, the long adventure days. I mean, every day that I have a long ride, I want to see some new area, some new road, you know, go on the mountain bike, something like that. But yeah, there's also another part of me that is very structured and wants to do the intervals to the T. You know, I think there's a time and place for everything, and it's nice to have both.
Well, so here's the thing, is like a lot of people that are, or a lot of my friends that are not athletes and whatnot, look at this, and a lot of people are looking at Olympians as the big one. Like everyone's on their 4 year cycle and they're thinking, oh, this is so terrible. People have given so much now that it's being pushed back a year, and how terrible that must be for the athletes. But the way I look at it, and I'm curious what your opinion is on this, is like, well, it's not really that bad, because like what I enjoy, okay, so it's like, sure, there's some intervals where I was blowing my brains out this past winter, or maybe I was riding when it was freezing cold and thinking about racing and being ready in the spring. And now, like, I guess you could say that's kind of wasted, but I still like, I love the process, and it's like, okay, so it just gets pushed back another year. I'd still be doing the same thing. It's just now I'm just going to do it for a little bit longer. Like, I love the process of doing it every day. But I guess that's different if you're someone who really loves the racing and has a hard time getting through the training without the racing.
Right. I mean, I'm totally with you on that. I think, I wouldn't really change anything if I knew I wasn't racing in a year or a year and a half. I would still do do the same things I always do. But yeah, I do know a lot of people that they need the races to not necessarily motivate themselves, but that's just the kind of people they are. They need the competitive nature of the race to push themselves, and that's just how their body responds, maybe. But I think if you really love just the simple act of riding your bike and things like that, then you maybe see who can do it for a period where there's no concrete goal or anything like that. But yeah, it's difficult because a lot of people are very, especially in high level sports like the Olympics, especially Olympic sports that are only every 4 years, or, you know, they have events that are every 2 years, big championships. That's pretty hard because it's quite a process to get to that point. But yeah, it's something that's out of your control, I guess. So
sure. And then how has the training changed? Because obviously you have these massive goals. I mean, the Tour is the biggest race in the world, and that's obviously what's got to be in the back of your head. And that's great that you have that to motivate you for the end of the year. But with all the uncertainty and stuff, and obviously you have like the best coaches in the world looking after you, specifically about the training, like how have things changed? Or like, what have you changed with the training from what you'd typically be doing this time of year? Is it less volume or intensity, saving energy for the end of the season, or maybe you're doing more? What's changed?
Yeah, I think, well, for me personally, when I was in the lockdown period, you can only ride the trainer. I mean, I know some guys that were doing 25, 30-hour weeks back-to-back on the trainer for 6-7 weeks, and that's good for them. But for me, I would totally be shot mentally. And personally, I don't think that would be a good use of my time doing that. So, with the coaches, we decided it was best to just keep the more top end training going during that time where you're working with limited hours. Just more, VO2 max type efforts, more sure. Explosivity, because you don't want to lose that. There's plenty of time to put in the longer, easier hours later on. But I think for the most part, they've said, stay in the best shape you can, doing the least amount of effort possible. So now that
life,
I can ride outside, it's 20 hours a week or so, mostly endurance. Just staying fresh.
Who are the crazy ones doing 30 hours a week on the trainer? Or you don't have to name them if you don't want to, but I think it's more compliment to them.
Oh, I think a lot of the guys on Ineos, they do a lot of hours to begin with. So I think for them and their type of training, they kind of have to revert to that anyways.
Are they all coached by the team?
My teammate Robert does a lot.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. So why Andorra? I've never been to Andorra, and I think where I am in the Alps right now is like the sweetest place. But like, so why Andorra? What's so great about Andorra? Why do so many people live there?
Well, I think one of the reasons is the tax benefits. You also have so many climbs. Good healthcare. It's a really, really safe place to ride. The cars are really respectful. It's a very, sport-oriented place, I guess.
What other sports?
Really nice roads. A lot of runners there. Let's see, motocross.
Motocross.
Motocross trials.
You ever get out on the dirt bike? Do you ride dirt bikes at all?
I've been on a dirt bike, but I'm not I'm not super good at it. I think the e-bike is the closest I've gotten to a dirt bike in terms of proficiency.
Sure.
Do I have a dirt bike?
No, an e-bike.
Oh, I have an e-bike, but it's still in the box, actually. I'm going to give it to my mom. But
okay. Mountain bike or road bike?
Or it's a mountain bike.
Okay.
Have you ridden a mountain bike? The e-mountain bikes are so fun.
Dude, they're the most fun toy you can have. I think.
Yeah.
It's like you just feel like a hero.
Exactly. The only thing, you have to make sure you're not in the red zone on the battery. Otherwise.
Oh, it's a pig to pedal.
Otherwise, you're hauling that thing uphill. Yeah.
Yeah. They're
heavy. Yeah, those are, yeah, you can cover so much ground.
You can cover so much ground.
If you're tired from normal training or something, you just want to have fun on your mountain bike, but don't want to get up the climb, then yeah.
Well, it's great because it's like you could, I mean, for like people that, for like actual cyclists and stuff, it's, you can actually work on your skills and stuff if you want on like your rest day, because you don't really have to pedal that hard, but you can just go so fast on the trails that instead of like your lungs being the limiting factor, it's your skills of how fast you can just whip down these trails.
Right, yeah. It's true. It's yeah, they're pretty fun, but it is nice to pedal. But then when you really need that that release, then the e-bike is pretty nice.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I was out on a ride, was it yesterday or 2 days ago, something like that? And like I broke my pedal out on it, and I was like decently far away. And I don't have a phone plan here. Like, I've just decided I don't want a phone plan anymore. I'm just gonna get by on Wi-Fi and stuff. And like, for the whole purpose of when I'm out on my bike and I don't have Wi-Fi, I don't want to be bothered. And like, I will happily take the inconvenience of when that screws me over at times. But the thing is, I wouldn't have been able to call anybody anyway. Like, I'm living at the team house by myself anyway. So it's like, okay, it wouldn't have helped me anyway. So I just started like hitchhiking my way home, which has been, I've hitchhiked around the world. I've hitchhiked between 500 and 1,000 times easily throughout the course of my life.
And you're like, a seasoned pro.
Absolutely. Like, haven't died yet. And it's just, I've got the greatest stories from it. But what it dawned on me is the fact that like e-bikes are sweet, and the thing that I think a lot of people have to realize is that you can still get your heart rate up and you can still go hard on them. It's, you're just going to go faster. It's like if you're going bike touring on like a hardtail mountain bike and then someone gave you a road bike, you, like, you can just go
exactly right? Yeah, it's like road bike speeds, but you're on trails, and then you have to think two times faster, and you're dealing with a bike that's five times heavier. So
yeah, but the thing I was thinking about is like, as far as e-road bikes go, is I was like, man, they better get this stuff like dialed, because if something breaks on your e-road bike, now guys have the ability to do like ridiculously big loops. Like, if like you can get way out there, and if like your battery dies or something breaks on it, and you're calling your partner to come pick you up, or you're paying for an Uber, you're like 300 kilometers from home, like it's going to cause a lot of problems.
yeah, that's the thing. It's then you open up a whole nother can of worms when you're somewhere you don't want to be far from home.
Well, see, I'm excited for the future, because I think what the future is going to be is they're going to come up with some sort of an adapter so you can plug that. You can go with like your e-road bike, go ride for a while, and you could stop at like a Tesla charging thing and then just like boost up.
Oh, yeah. Like
5 minutes.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Or like the self-regenerating motor. So every time you go down a mountain pass and you're like pulling the brakes, it's like regenerating the motor.
Just
like tour around. I think that's the way to do it. I think that's
a good idea. I think Tesla should just get in the e-bike sector.
Yeah,
as a promotional thing or something, and then
Well, I've always wanted Toyota to build a bike just so it would never break. It'd be like,
oh yeah,
building the whole bike.
Toyota, that's true. Old reliable. You'd have a Corolla e-bike.
But okay, so as cyclists, like, our lives don't okay, obviously you being locked down and not being able to go outside, that's a huge difference. But like the monk type lifestyle of like being socially isolated isn't that different from most cyclists, but for sure there's got to be some things you've changed. Is there anything like away from cycling, or maybe even in cycling, that you've changed because of the lockdown that you'll like keep with you after, like a new hobby or something you've picked up? Like, I don't know, whatever it could be. That you've
With you? I think a lot of the weeks, I've been, most every morning been studying my Spanish. So that's been nice, just to use my mind a bit more. And it's nice because then I can communicate with my girlfriend's friends, family, things like that a bit easier. So it's a nice thing to do. And you know, once at first it was hard to start, but now it's just kind of a routine. So that's been nice, because I probably never would have stepped into that routine hadn't it been for, you know, the lockdown, where you need to find new ways to keep yourself occupied, things like that. Sure. Yeah. So I think just generally slowing down in everything, and making more of a routine, things like that. And then, yeah, you appreciate the little things, like, yeah, riding your bike outside, you know, I never thought I would take that for granted, but, yeah.
Okay, cool. And then, so going back to cycling, like, we've been racing together for years. Like, I've been racing at you since you first got on the road bike. And like, I remember I was in the race with you when you won that stage at Redlands up Oak Glen or whatever. And that,
oh yeah,
jumped you up on the rally right after, like, okay, who is this kid that just jumped on the bike and is crushing everybody here? So that got you up on the rally. And then how did the transition to Jumbo come after that? Did you have an agent, or was there a race you won, or how did that connection happen?
Yeah, so let's see, the next year after, yeah, the year after I started with Rally, we did Tour California, and I had a few days there that were, yeah, caught the eye of what was then Lotto Jumbo, and so that's when they first approached me, saying, oh, we'd like to, do some testing with you, things like that. I did have an agent at the time. Say that again.
Where did you go to do the testing, or what?
Oh, just in Boulder, just a normal lactate test.
Okay.
Yeah. And
you didn't have an agent at the time?
No, I did. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And did they help make the connection with Jumbo at first, or did they just come up to Jonas or someone at Rally?
No, they didn't make the initial connection. I actually met the director that got in touch with me from Jumbo at the after party of Tour of California, just at the bar. He approached me, and then we exchanged emails, and then that was that. So
sweet. So now you've been at the world tour level for a little bit. What were the hardest things? I mean, so there's a lot of change like you have to adapt to the European culture off the bike. You have to adapt to moving up to the world tour from Rally, and moving to, like, so you'd been on an American based team with nothing but Americans and Canadians on the team, to now a Dutch mostly Dutch team, and for sure Euro cultured team. What were the hardest things to adapt to with all that change going on or off the bike?
Yeah, I think just the races were just so much harder, and they take more out of you mentally and physically. You know, you need a lot more time to rest, but you don't really have the time. So then, you know, sometimes you dig yourself into a hole, either physically or mentally, and then you don't have those same outlets, I guess, that you would when you're at home in the comfort of your friends and family and things like that. So then it becomes more of I don't know, at least for me, not a lonely thing, because I never, I'm fine by myself, I guess, but it's you don't have anybody to release that energy with.
But weren't you living with Nielsen?
I was, yeah. Okay. But that's the thing is where I, it's all cyclists. So sure. It's everybody's, it's hard to relate to people outside of racing, things like that.
Yeah. And do you have, what stuff do you get up to outside of cycling, either other sports or hobbies or anything like that?
Let's see. I mean, yeah, these days I hang out with my girlfriend a lot. That's been really nice. Yeah, recently studying language. That's been pretty good.
Sure.
I don't know, walking. Not too much.
For cycling, that's an actor. That's another activity, walking.
Yeah, exactly. That's a hard one. Running, walking.
You were a cross country skier, weren't you?
Golf.
Golf.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Dude, golf is for like arthritis and getting knocked out of the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, but I really want to be good at golf.
You really want to be good at golf?
I do, yeah. I'm really bad at it, but I love it. It's so fun.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you sober when you're playing golf?
Most of the recently, yeah. I've only had a few with friends. We would go out with a six pack or something, but then I'm really bad, so it's not even worth it.
That's the only time I've done it, like going to the driving range, and I was just too bad to enjoy it. I was like, give me a hockey stick and I'll be better.
Yeah. No, that's one thing maybe in 20 years or so that I'd like to be start working on at least.
Like, you've put thought into wanting to take up like competitively golf after cycling?
No, not competitively. No, definitely not.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. Maybe if it turned out that I was really good, that'd be a good way to make a fortune, but I can't see that happening.
Sure. Okay. But did you cross country ski race before?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Yeah. I've done that longer than I've been bike racing or riding a bike. Yeah.
You still do that a lot in the winter?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
And you still spend the winters in Durango, Colorado?
Yeah, for the most part. I think this year was the shortest amount of time I spent there. That was just, I think, November to the end of December. Okay. Yeah.
And were you in Europe other than that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And were you in Girona or Andorra during the winter there? I guess Andorra would be covered in snow then.
Actually Andorra's not too bad during the winter. It's kind of like Colorado, pretty, you know, it'll snow, but then the, you know, 6 out of 7 days it's blue skies and warm. So it's, I think it's actually, but I have to say I haven't spent many winters there, but yeah, Colorado climate is pretty good in the winter. Andorra climate is pretty similar. So.
Sure. And I mean, coming from Colorado, now living in Andorra, you're in like the two meccas of the world for ski touring. Have you ever tried that or had any interest in doing that?
I definitely have interest. One of my teammates is really big into it. So I think this next winter, I'd like to go out with him.
Who's that?
And yeah, I mean, a lot of my friends from college and friends in Durango do it, but it's just something I've never tried. At least with all the high tech, lightweight stuff and everything like that. So,
sure. Okay. Usually for most guys, it's like the avalanche risk is what keeps them away from it. But here in Europe, everything's so developed, you can like just find places that are so controlled. It's not
exactly.
Like
I mean, that's the thing with Andorra is that there's no avalanche danger, so they go everywhere and it's fine. So that's definitely removes that barrier. Yeah, because that's scary for sure. and you have to learn a lot to be proficient in avalanche safety and everything like that.
Yeah, for sure. And so who on your team is in ski touring?
That's Amund Johnson, Norwegian.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So one question I have for you is like the idea of talent in the world tour. And what do you think separates guys at the world tour level? Is it once you get to the world tour, between the best and the worst at that level, does it come down to talent or is it work ethic there?
I think everyone's really, really talented. Obviously there's certain guys that are freaks and they're extraordinarily talented. And that's something that, some people will never bridge up to, I think, no matter how hard you work. Work ethic wise, I honestly think everybody works hard, and, you know, I don't want to say everybody does the same thing, but everybody does their job. Everyone works hard. I think the determining factor is just the mentality, because it's such a hard sport, and you know, you need to stay, especially in the races, you need to stay so focused. Positive, you need to be resilient, things like that. So I for me, that's what I've observed to be the biggest difference maker, at least.
Resilience.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Definitely. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. And who are the, who's like, if you think of like the, just the biggest super freak talents, who are the names that come to mind in the world tour to you? Guys that are just have so much talent, you can't believe it. They're just the freaks.
I mean, Primoz Roglic. yeah. He's, I think he's a freak of nature. Yeah. He's really strong, but
do you have stories of that?
Also, he's really human, and he, I like that's one example of someone that just is mentally so unbeatable. There's nothing that can get in his way mentally. He's, yeah.
Do you have any stories that show that?
Oh, I think in the Giro this past year, he came out flying. And then there was a lot in the press about, you know, his past and things like that. And, you know, he was getting sick. The team we had there, we really weren't there to support him. We weren't good enough to support him. So, there was that mental pressure. But the whole time, you know, he was really just focused, taking it day to day, never let any huge instances get him down. We had the incident with the team car taking a pee break while he needed a bike change.
Back over the dimensional.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine, really. I mean, for him, he acknowledged that, yeah, everyone makes mistakes, and he just moves past things really fast. Yeah, same in the Volta. There was all, you know, there's nothing ever goes perfect. He's just a pretty even character.
Is there any, okay, so on the other side of that spectrum, I guess, is there anyone that comes to mind as just someone that works on, like, of course, everyone works super, super hard and is super dedicated and focused at this level. Like, you have to be almost a bit of a head case and just be so focused and isolate yourself so much. But is there anyone that comes to mind that's just an anomaly, even in that case, like this, someone that probably doesn't have enough talent that should be there, but is just made up for it with just a ridiculous work ethic, or even just things you've seen people do to try to get that much better and faster that just seem absolutely insane to you?
I can't think of any in the world tour or on my team. I mean, yeah, we, like on my team, for example, we have everybody in a range of people that really train hard. They get everything out of their training, and then guys that are like, you know, don't ride too hard, just save it for the races, save it for once a week. And, you know, everyone ends up at the same place, more or less. But I think for me, the guy that sticks out the most just in my past on Rally is Rob Britton. He's worked hard. He's had a lot of setbacks in his career, and you know, he works super damn hard, and, you know, maybe you could say some of it is unnecessary hard work, but yeah, for him, that's what he gets out of it, and if that's what works for him mentally, then that's great. But yeah, super hard worker, super dedicated.
Is there any specific stories that you can think of with Rob?
Not any specific stories, just, you know, if I was in Boulder and he was training in Boulder too, like the massive rides he would be doing, and I'm like, man, I don't know if I can even ride with you today. You just go too hard, even when you're going easy. It's just not fun for me. And yeah, things like that. But, you know, everybody has their tics, I guess.
Sure. So are you someone that wants to train with other people or likes to train solo?
I think for the most part alone, but yeah, I like to ride with my girlfriend. I like to ride with smaller groups or teammates, things like that. But I'd say for the most part, I enjoy just a good long solo ride. It's like therapy.
Sure, yeah. Who's the best person and the worst person to train with?
Let's see. I think the worst person to train with is either Primoz or Robert, because they're so strong. They ride so fast all the time. I mean, I love them, but sometimes you're like, man, I don't want to ride this hard anymore. I just want to go easy on the flats and on the climbs a bit harder. But yeah, some guys just like to go really fast all the time. Those are my Nielsen used to ride really hard always during training. It was so hard to stay with him. Like, yeah, I just like to take it easy when I'm not doing an interval or something like that. But yeah.
Do they all live in Andorra with you up there or Girona?
Kind of both. Yeah. Robert lives mostly full time in Andorra now.
Okay. Cool. Is there anything that you ever tried that was ridiculous or an example of like when you ever just pushed it too far or something like that? Like I talked to one of my mountain biker buddies back in Squamish and asked him like, man, what's the craziest thing you've ever tried? And he's like, well, I filled a backpack full of rocks one time thinking that'd be like weight training. Is there anything that you've ever tried that's just ridiculous?
You know, I haven't, I'm really pretty moderate in my, efforts, I'd say. I know it's kind of lame, but I mean, I guess like kind of like you, just riding in the cold. Sure. You know, I've spent a lot of winters back home in Colorado, and yeah, the last thing I wanted to do was ride inside or something like that. So I'd go out on the road bike or the mountain bike. You're just covered in snow. You get home and your hands are, you know, that fiery hand feeling. You're like, what have I done? I'm so stupid. But I, you know, it makes you mentally tougher, I guess. So I think, sure. I think a lot of things that are mentally hard to do are sometimes, yeah, beneficial.
And so going into riding in the cold, is there any like tips you have for that? Like things that after years of suffering and that you figured out, like, this is like an ultimate gear item or some sort of like hacks and stuff like that to stay warm. Like for me, to give you an example, like handlebar mitts, as dumb as they look, they're like the best thing since Gore-Tex, I think.
Or like, yeah, I've seen those that you have. Those are unstoppable.
They look so dumb, but they're incredible because the only thing that keep your hands warm, because even if you put on like giant snowboarding mitts, like eventually your hands get sweaty or like rainwater or snow drips into them and then they get wet. And then once they're wet, they freeze. And then you're like trying to like deal with zippers and stuff like that. And mitts, like these things, you don't even have to wear gloves underneath them. They're so good.
Yeah. I think for me, it's pretty just like a thick neck buff.
Okay.
That does a lot.
One in mind?
I don't know, the one out of my mom's closet. It's you know, just having that warmth around your face. You know, sometimes if they're too thin, they always fall down or they get too like sloppy, I guess. So if you just kind of have a thicker, stiffer one, it'll just stay
up around,
like hover around your face.
Yeah,
and that helps me a lot. And yeah, a couple different pairs of gloves, because I personally hate riding in really thick gloves.
Okay.
But if you have, for example, like a thinner underlayer and then a, you know, overlayer glove that you have in your pocket or somewhere on your bike, and then maybe even another super duper pair in case things get heavy. But
sure.
Yeah.
Okay. What about, I know you had for a while the Shimano S-Fire booties. They look like crazy.
Oh yeah, those are great.
Are they good?
Yeah, they're really good.
Okay.
Our clothing sponsor now, Agu, they make some that are like, oh, they're like Nazi boots almost. They come up almost to your knees.
Really?
And they're that same kind of material. Yeah, yeah.
What?
But a lot of the guys in the Netherlands like them.
What's the brand?
It's the AGU.
Like the motorcycle helmets?
Maybe there's the same. I don't think these guys make motorcycle helmets.
Okay.
but yeah, AGU. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Huh. It's a Dutch company.
Okay, cool. Is there any, this does not have to be cycling related. This could be anything. What's like the best little gear item or like best like purchase you've ever made? It could be like a handlebar bag for riding, a suitcase, a pillow, headphones, whatever. Is there anything that comes to mind as like, yes, that was absolutely worth the money?
For me, I think mountain bikes. I think if you have some sort of second vehicle, I know it's not a simple thing to buy, but if you have something that can take you out of your normal rhythm of, you know, say you're a road cyclist, if you have something that's going to take you on a different surface or see somewhere new, that's pretty nice. Or just, yeah, a pair of running shoes, that can also be nice, just as something that's taking you out of your normal plane of motion. Something okay. like that.
That's cool. Yeah. Good words. So how about, what's the worst advice you hear in probably cycling, but it could just be like advice that you commonly hear that you strongly disagree with? Is there anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, I think people that say, oh, you need to be skinny to climb well. I mean, yeah, there's a certain line. You will climb faster if you're a bit lighter, but you know, if you just go with that, then you're missing out on so many other things that it takes to be good at climbing. You know, you need power, and it takes a lot of excess skinniness, I guess, to lose power, but still some people go pretty far. And yeah, you also need to know how to ride climbs, how to ride the races, things like that. There's so many more nuances, I guess, to climbing well. And it's not only just losing weight. I think, yeah, to me, it's still a pretty old fashioned notion, I guess, that you need to be super light. I mean, I think at the highest level, yeah, one kilo or, you know, or so can make or break the result on that day. But yeah, I think for the most part, you don't need to be stressing about it. Yeah. And I guess people that say, oh, you need a good 20 minute power, something like that. It's unheard of that your 20 minute power matters for anything in road racing. I mean, at least our trainers, it's never anything based on a 20 minute power value or something. It's nice to know where you stand in that, but it's just not, in my opinion, it's not a realistic metric, really.
Okay. And have you ever pushed it too far with going skinny and getting super light?
Yeah, I think in Tour of Utah 2018, I was really skinny, and yeah, it worked for that week. I mean, it was a week long, so
I think this is a pretty bad example, man. You were winning with like one leg.
Yeah, but like I said, it worked for 1 week, and then after that, my body just I mean, yeah, 3 weeks or 4 weeks later, I think I started the Vuelta, and I was still good for the first 10 days or so. But then after that, my body just, whatever food touched my mouth, it would, you know, it was like double the calories, just because my body was not used to eating properly or eating enough carbohydrates, things like that. Yeah. But that, I mean, I'm grateful to have learned that lesson. And yeah, it's not something that I was pushing for a super long period of time either. But yeah, you have to know your limits, I guess.
Huh? Cause so I, again, like racing with you since you kind of started on the road, I just remember you being absolutely unreal that year at the Dauphiné, and then showing it up at Utah was just unbelievable. And so what were the biggest things, like you had always been like progressing throughout the years that prior to that, but that year, like you made such a huge step up at Utah and the Dauphiné. And then again, this last year in 2019 at the Vuelta, winning a stage there, like those are just massive jumps up you made there. Is there anything you can attribute that to, like any specific area that, so I guess Utah would have been getting super skinny, but is there anything else or was that it?
Yeah, I think Utah, you know, I went home for a month or two before that race. So that was nice, just, you know, because it was my first year being in Europe. And, you know, up until then, I really hadn't been riding very well. I was pretty heavy. Like, for instance, that Dauphiné, I was maybe 6 kilos overweight.
Okay.
And but I was still riding well there for some reason. And then, then in Utah, I said, okay, I need to, you know, get serious. I need to be more professional, with the things off the bike, things like that. Can't party every weekend with my friends. Got to buckle down. I think just those little things helped. But aside from that, it's, you know, just the consistent work, you know, nothing crazy. There was no like watershed moment where I was like, oh my God, yeah, that's the secret to my, my physiology, or that's the secret to what makes me tick mentally. You know, it's just, I mean, of course there's things that you do in training or in life where you're like, okay, that's not going to work for me. I think the biggest thing is just the the consistent progress little by little, learning how to actually race my bike. That helps a lot too.
Sure.
That's probably the biggest thing, actually.
Was there any
just learning the craft,
like in training? Like, I don't know, I'm totally throwing out random stuff here. Like, I don't know, any of the like the fasted state training or any sort of different things you changed in training or your diet or anything like that, that you think, that helped quite a bit or that worked for me?
Yeah, I think just more, you know, before when I was racing in the US or even in the first year on the team, I was doing a lot of, I'd say I would call it just too much high intensity work, too much threshold work. And I was kind of missing out on that just normal endurance, you know, just easy riding for a long time, which at that time sounded a bit old fashioned to me. But I think, yeah, since over the years, I've slowly gotten used to it. And for me now, that's a big tool, is just knowing that it's okay to go easy a lot. You know, you save yourself for the races. You know, you do 6-7 hours and you're not dead the next day because you didn't go 6-7 hours as hard as you could for the whole time. You went 6-7 hours, yeah, quite easy really, which was hard to come to terms with in the beginning. So you're like, oh, I'm not even training, I'm not pushing the pedals, but sure. Yeah, that's the thing. There's a time and a place to ride hard, but it has to be pretty calculated. So I think that's the biggest thing, is just learning the value of what it means to actually be riding in endurance, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was definitely a big wake-up call I had when coming to Europe here. Is like, I could get away with hammering myself in training than hammering myself in North America, because the racing is just so much easier in North America, but the racing here is just warp speed all the time. Like, you're just getting your skull kicked in some race in France no one's even heard of, and you're just like, it's just so hard here that I don't know, I definitely learned that lesson as well here.
Yeah, exactly.
And so as cyclists and like yourself, especially over the last couple of years, you live out of a suitcase for so much of the year. Is there anything unique that you travel with? Anything that maybe like reminds you of home, or something just unique that you travel with? I mean, a lot of guys will travel with like an AeroPress or something, but anything that stands out for you?
Oh man, my suitcase is pretty bare. It's a pretty light suitcase.
Okay.
But yeah, one pair of pants, one pair of shorts, couple underwear. I think a tea for me, a tea kettle and some different teas. That's pretty, especially in a grand tour or something. You just want something different, I guess. It's nice to way to relax. But yeah, usually I just cross my fingers who I'm rooming with, and you know, they'll bring some chocolate or something or some candy and things like that. But usually at the races, I don't know, the mechanics or some other helper staff on the team will sympathize with me, because I know I like junk food, and they'll go to the gas station and buy me a bag of chips or some candy or something. So,
okay. What's your go-to ride food then? Like, you're on a ride, you're cracked, you stop at the gas station. What are you getting?
Oh, let's see.
Everything.
What do I get? I really, when it's hot, I really like ice cream. Like
in the middle of the ride.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't upset your stomach or anything.
Eh, I don't know. So far, so good. I've got a pretty resilient stomach. like cookie ice cream sandwiches. That's the word I'm looking for.
Okay. The Oreo ones.
Yeah, the Oreo ones, or the I don't know if the Maxi Bon like duo ice cream bars.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Those are really good. Yeah. Yeah, I like those. But usually it's a quick in and out, like a Red Bull, something like that. Because for me, the longer I stop, I just shut down, and the rest of the ride is it goes to shit. So yeah, I have to be super quick. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not a big coffee stop. I mean, if I'm with friends or something, I'll stop for coffee, of course. But if I'm solo, the objective is it's like an angry dad on a road trip or something, like, you know, only one pee stop, only stop for food once, let's go, let's get there.
Sure.
Yeah.
What about like, what would you pack your pockets with, like, leaving the house? Like, what would you use for ride food? Like, I'm sure you guys get so much sponsor ride food and stuff, but you just got to get sick of that after a while and want some real food. Like, is there anything you go with there?
Yeah, for in the real food department, let's see. I like, they're kind of like mini croissants, almost like prepackaged mini croissants. So I usually I'll slice those open, put some peanut butter and jam in there, and yeah, that's a pretty easy one. If you're just like look in the cupboard and all of a sudden you realize you're out of bars and gels. Let's see. I think recently my girlfriend and I got into making granola bars. Some of them are a little kind of tough, like jerky almost. So still working on the ratio, but that's nice. I mean, when you have a day, you're like, I don't know what to do. Oh, okay. Let's bake something. Let's make some hopefully delicious granola bars.
Starving on the side of the road. Everything tastes good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And they also have these like fig kind of bars. Yeah, it's like fig bread. I don't know. It's just a mixture of figs and nuts and things like that. And it's kind of a prepackaged in like a saran wrap almost. So you just chop off a hunk of that, put it in your pocket, some good fast energy.
Okay. And then, okay. How about switching pace a little bit here? Is there a quote that's stuck with you? Kind of a weird question. If nothing comes to mind, we can just skip it. But is there any quotes that you've stuck with your whole life or you really like?
Yeah, I have no quotes. I'm sorry. I have.
Okay. How about anyone come to mind when you think of the word successful?
Successful.
Yeah.
Getting real deep. I don't know. I think that's a hard definition, because you look at someone, you say, oh wow, they're so successful. But I think behind everyone has their own problems, and that's not a nice way to put it. Even if someone is successful, they have their own, barriers in life, or maybe they think, oh, okay, I'm not successful. I'm not where I want to be. Cause I know a lot of people that I would call successful, but they're never satisfied with what they have. They always want something more, something better out of themselves, things like that. So to me, that's, I don't know. I don't know if it's necessarily success if you're not satisfied with what you have, or you know, not that you need to be complacent, but
yeah. Okay. Well, how about like, I would change it to like role model. Is there anyone who's a role model for SEP? Someone you've looked up to?
Who's a role model for me? I think my youth, mountain bike coach growing up, Chad Cheney, he just kind of introduced me to mountain biking, and riding. And, you know, he came from just kind of a philosophy where you should do a lot of sports. You should enjoy, sports. And if you enjoy it, then if you want to be competitive, that's great. If not, no problem. But, yeah, the thing from Chad that stuck with me most is that, yeah, you can wait as long as possible to be, competitive or be super focused on something, because there's plenty of time for that later on in life. And for me, that's helped a lot, because even now it helps me take a step back every now and then and just, you know, you don't need to feel like you're behind the eight ball or something and always trying to do the most and things like that. You just need to enjoy it. And I think with that, then everything else comes with it.
Okay, cool. And so, I mean, something I really admire about you personally is that you are one of the best climbers in the world on the bike right now. You are hands down one of the best, yeah, cyclists in the world right now, but you don't seem to have changed at all. Like, you are such a laid back, just such a normal butt, such a normal dude that way. It hasn't seemed to get to his head at all. Like, the image that comes to mind so much for me is, I guess it would have been the Vuelta last year. I think it was, you posted something in your Instagram story of you guys after one of the stages getting one of the helicopter rides down. And it's just like you being stoked to get in the helicopter, but at the same time, you're just like shoving a Snickers or something in your mouth. Like, still the same kid, just like, okay, we're going to spend the money to have the helicopter here, but we're going to have like the Mr. Bigger candy bar or something like that at the same time. And I love that none of that's changed for you. But Jumbo Visma is coming up, as everyone's looking at them like they're the big new sports science team, like just like Ineos and that. And so there's all kinds of crazy tools. Like, there's the mattresses you guys sleep on that's special, the Normatex. Now there's like the drill massage tools and whatnot, and ketones and all this crazy stuff, and cherry juice. And what are some of the crazy ones that the team has tried that you've seen?
Let's see. I think for me, the ketones are interesting, but for me, I personally don't like them. You just get so blocked. You know, you just don't enter that glycolytic state, so you can't really push that power, especially at the beginning of the race. Maybe at the end of the race it helps, but I don't know. Maybe it's a placebo too. Expensive placebo, but
they're not for you though. What else? You don't think?
I'm not really. I think I can count on one hand how many times I've used them. Okay. I more or less believe in the science, but yeah, it's for me, it's not necessary. And they taste like absolute shit too. So yeah. they're really bad. Yeah.
I had a friend of mine tell me they taste it. I asked him what he thought of it, 'cause I knew he tried them. I was like, yo, what did you think of it? He's like, dude, it's like drinking diesel.
Yeah. It's like, it's like at a bar when they have the like half price shot or something, and and it's just the most like bottom of the barrel quality liquor with some sort of flavoring. That's the kind of it just doesn't wash out of your mouth either. You can have a whole cup of coffee and you'll still taste the.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys ever like throw up or start gagging in the middle of the race because they're having one?
No, but I don't know. If it goes down the wrong pipe, then yeah, it's not a pleasant experience. Sure. But you got to time it, or, you know, have like a gel or something, right? You got to have something to chase it with.
Okay.
So it's like taking a shot, basically.
Sure. Now, I know you like your beers. And you're pushing the IPAs on me for a while, and I did not like them at all. And then staying with my teammate Felix here, he got me back on them, and stuff. And so I'm back on those and I have more open mind there. How about you? What's your favorite, what's your beverage of choice?
Doesn't let's have see, to be right now.
You could tell you know, me kombucha for tea.
You know, in Spain, they don't really have a lot of IPAs, or I don't think they're necessarily, well, they're for sure not as readily available as they are in the US or maybe Canada now. So they do have really good light beers though. I like, Alhambra. It's, I think they're brewed in Granada. Also Moritz is really nice beer. That's in Barcelona. Yeah, just really refreshing afternoon in the sun kind of beers.
Okay. And you said tea before. Are you a tea or coffee guy?
I like both. I think tea in the evenings, coffee definitely in the mornings, a lot of coffee.
Okay. How do you brew your coffee?
Yeah.
What's your machine?
I'm not too picky with coffee. Right now I've been in the, what is it? The little mocha pot.
Yeah.
Coffee, but I don't know. I'm definitely far from a coffee snob. To me, okay. I mean, I can definitely appreciate good coffee, but I'm not going to spend three, four euros on a coffee in a cafe every day. Sure. For me, all I need is some jet fuel in the morning and yeah.
Cool. And so being an American on a mostly Dutch team, is there any standout things that they make fun of you for that, like, you're just different in some way that they think is just ridiculous?
I think the whole Trump thing for sure. They think, oh, any American, they like Trump. And I'm like, well, no, but I'm sorry for him.
Okay.
I apologize on his behalf. not to get political, but, and then I think, yeah, let's see what there are a lot of funny stereotypes they have about, oh yeah, they think, I mean, I guess I agree with it to some extent, but the fact that Americans are very, fake sometimes, or maybe they think that because Americans, a lot of the times, are a bit more outgoing and expressive. So they, you know, in a lot of European cultures, it's more, okay, let's be modest, humble, you know, which I appreciate. And then maybe the stereotypical American culture is, oh yeah, I'm the best. Yeah, let's go. You know, real gung-ho attitude. And they're like, whoa there.
Okay.
Things well, like
I guess
that,
the Dutch are quite reserved, like out of
yeah, any. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
I have to say that's one thing about their culture I really appreciate though, because it's a very humble culture. You know, nobody needs to be the biggest and baddest one in the room. Everybody appreciates what they have, and yeah, it's a nice culture.
Okay. And so this is a bit of a weird question, but I'm pretty proud of it. You're an outdoor, you love the outdoors. You know, not only cycling, you love to walk as well and on the mountain bike. If you had to get a tattoo of like specific GPS coordinates, where would that spot be? Where is like just, it could be yeah. like a mountain, lake, a cabin, a house, a climb, whatever. Is there a specific spot? It doesn't even have to be in the outdoors. It could be a beach house or whatever. Is there anything that comes
yeah.
to mind?
I think for me, it would be somewhere, you know, some saddle of a mountain on the Colorado Trail, just north of Durango. Yeah, there's a section of trail there that super high up in the mountains, and it's just so beautiful. You know, all the peaks around there, this kind of red gold color. It reminds me of when I was young and going on crazy epic mountain bike missions. You're alone for like 9 hours on the mountain bike trails, just on this crazy adventure.
9 hours.
Yeah.
That's wicked. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Man.
Before the bike computers had the GPS too. So you know, you're in the Camelback with the topo map. You're like, okay, where am I?
Okay. So you know how to read like a topo map.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, I can get away with it, I guess.
That's a great skill to have. I have them all over the walls here. Like, I've just put.
Oh yeah, I have to say, I really like the maps. Yeah, I've seen the ones you have on the walls. Yeah. I like it.
It's, man,
I could look at maps for forever. I love looking at maps.
Yeah, me too. And you know what's great is, like, it's, I have them set up in the kitchen here. So, like, when I'm eating my breakfast or anything, I'm always looking at them. And then I've taken, like, a Sharpie, and you just start highlighting all, like, the major roads. And then you get a much better sense, like, when you start highlighting specific passes and roads, like, just the key ones you want to hit. And
exactly.
You just subconsciously route planning all day. And just
I love route planning. It's so fun.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad to hear. So Felix and I were having not a debate. We were just trying to figure out which one was the best. Which one do you use? Like Komoot, Garmin, Strava? What do you use to plan your routes out with?
I think I exclusively use Strava. On the mountain bike, it's nice because they have the heat maps, so you can see, like, okay, the map itself doesn't have a trail or a road, but let's see if anybody that's ridden on Strava has done something down this hillside. And then you see that heat map zone, and you say, okay, there's something there. I'm not going to be bushwhacking for 3 hours to get down the hillside. Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
I think that's a handy tool. Yeah.
That way. Yeah. That's a cool one. Okay.
Yeah.
How about a place you'd love to see that maybe you haven't been to yet? Somewhere you'd really like to go visit, biking or not biking?
For me, I went to Japan for Japan Cup at the end of last year, and, you know, only saw a chunk of it. You know, where we were in for the race, and then Tokyo, which was really cool. But yeah, I'd like to see other areas of Japan, even in the winter time. I've heard it's amazing there in the winter, skiing, things like that. But yeah, it was just a really nice culture to me, something totally different than American or European culture. Yeah, definitely different from other Asian cultures. Yeah, I'd like to spend some more time there.
Okay. Cool. And then have you ever bought like any sort of like unique souvenirs from like cool places you've been? Like people that'll go to America will sometimes buy like cowboy boots, or like, I'm bringing my mom home like some cowbells from the Swiss Alps, because that's like really unique to hear. Or people go to Canada and they bring home maple syrup or whatever. Is there any sort of things that you've ever got from any of your travels around the world?
Yeah, my mom likes, I don't know, you might know what they are. It's like kind of an Austrian, maybe Swiss thing, like the kind of table cloths they have, or like the little placemat kind of things for not like a coaster, but I don't know. They're like nice little woven things, and they have the little people on them, or the checkers and things like that. It's probably a really bad description, but yeah, my mom loves those. So if I see those in a little gift shop or something, if I'm more in your area of the world, then that's okay. Something I try and buy. But yeah, the other thing about the race, sometimes you just never have the time to go into even a gift shop or something and get a souvenir.
Of course.
It's like, oh man, I went all these places and I only took photos, which, yeah, photos are nice, but sometimes it's nice to have a physical item.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the thing, is like any of the races I've tried to make a really good effort to always go to at least get like the stickers from the national parks around the US from races that I've been to.
Oh yeah.
And then just like deckle up your Nalgene bottle, because that's like the one thing you don't have to be sponsor correct on.
exactly. Yeah, the Nalgene bottle and the laptop.
Yeah, exactly. At this point, my laptop is such a piece of crap that like when it eventually dies, I'll probably be more upset about having to lose all the stickers that are on it.
Oh yeah.
Computer.
Yeah. That's a big, big loss.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Man, how about an extravagant toy, a luxury item, anything like that? You get $10 million in the bank tomorrow. What are you going to get?
Oh, let's see. I think our team is sponsored by Normatec, but I personally don't have a pair of any recovery boots. So I have to say, I would love pair of recovery boots, and they are quite pricey. So that would be, to me, that's a luxury item. And
wait, doesn't the team really luxurious if they're sponsored?
No, we. Yeah, I haven't heard anything about any. I guess I need to really butter them up some more, but.
What?
I guess I'm not good enough on social media. They'd give them to me, and then they'd never get their marketing return on.
Well, hopefully they're getting it right now with the 10 viewers of this podcast. That's funny.
No, we'll blow it up, man.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll get you some Normatec boots.
Yeah.
Okay.
Full luxury.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't want to take too much more of your time, but one thing I'm going to give you here. Do you have any sort of favorite training songs? And I promise I'm going somewhere with this. Like any sort of, like you have a playlist on Spotify or whatnot for when you have to get the super hard intervals going. What are some go-to songs? You can tell me anything from Thunderstruck to California Girls.
Let's see. I think for riding outdoors, I generally don't listen to music. If I do, I just put it on my speaker on my phone. But sometimes on a long ride, I'll listen to just country music because, I mean, it's the most slow-paced thing. Well, not necessarily. I guess some good old pop country can get you going. But it's quite relaxing, and you know, sometimes music can make you too antsy, and then you go way over the, or you get too pumped up and you're like, oh my god, my heart rate's at 180 right now. So definitely some country. I've been listening to a lot of reggaeton on the trainer. That's fun too.
A specific
nothing
song
nothing too
to mind?
Intense, really.
What do you like country, like Jason Aldean or
Yeah, I like Jason Aldean. Let's see. Zach Brown Band.
Okay, yeah.
All the basic homegrown ones, you know. Nothing to say that again.
Homegrown, like Zach Brown?
Oh, Homegrown, yep. Okay. Colder Weather. My buddy and I, anytime there would be like a karaoke night or something, we'd always sing Colder Weather.
Okay. But is it Toes in the Sand? Is that Zach Brown
band? Yeah.
Yeah.
Toes, I think. Yeah. Yeah. That's a really yeah.
Okay.
That's like drinking the margarita on the porch, having a barbecue.
Yeah. Well, so okay, maybe this is too hyped up for you then. But so did you came from mountain biking, so did I. And in my opinion, if someone asked me where's the best place to go ride a bike, and they're expecting Mallorca or Italy or the Alps or somewhere like that. And for me, it's the Whistler Bike Park, hands down, that's the best thing you can get. And when I was DVDs and your mountain bike DVDs were cool. I had a good collection of those going on when DVDs were a thing. And my favorite one was Follow Me, which was a DVD. And it's I've watched the Whistler Bike Park section of that probably 100+ times. I don't know if
I think so. Are there a few of them?
That's New World Disorder, I think you're thinking. There's 10 New World Disorder ones. But Follow Me was just an incredible one. And specifically the Whistler Bike Park one, I'd highly recommend you go watch it. And the song to that is, it's Re-Education Through Labor by Rise Against. And if you watch that section of it, I think you'd get really hyped up. It's a downhill mountain biking section, but it's pretty cool.
Oh, I love downhill movies, man.
Yeah, so I figured you'd get a kick out of that. So that's a song I think you'd get a kick out of if you watch this section of Follow Me. And then when you're just ripping on the road bike, you can be thinking of something way cooler than riding a downhill bike park.
The best are the really old school downhill ones where they've got super narrow bars, and it's just totally different scene to how the technology and everything is now. But they're still such party animals and it's great.
Oh, dude, mountain biking is so much cooler than road biking. They get so many more cooler toys. Mountain bikes.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Definitely toys.
Yeah. Okay. And then so last question and then I'll let you go. What is your favorite? Because I get such a kick out of this. Your favorite Euro English saying? They say so. The obvious one that comes to mind is full gas and whatnot. But they always make fun of me for saying I guess I call everybody buddy, or like they mm-hmm. thought they'd never heard the saying, like, that's nuts. Like, they were all making fun of me for saying that yeah. last year. One, they've never heard that before. What's your that's favorite? Nuts. Yeah. They have so many weird, like, Euro English sayings. What are the good ones that come to mind?
Let's see. I think, off the top, whenever we stop for coffee, it's like, okay, in English, you'd say, let's have a coffee or something, but they say, like, take a coffee, which I guess would make sense if you directly translate it from most other languages, but that's always
let's make
funny.
A picture.
Take a coffee where we...
We make a
yeah, plan. Yeah, make a picture, yeah. yeah, yeah. But it's always cute. let's see, what else? The Dutch ones are really funny.
Yeah.
They have some things that are just lost in translation.
And the dry humor.
The dry... Well, sometimes they don't understand certain sarcastic... sayings or just some sarcasm in general, so sometimes they get quite offended if you say, and you're like, no, I didn't mean it like that, because yeah, I think English can often be pretty sarcastic, and you're like, no, I really didn't mean it like that, I'm so sorry. But or everything is like on something. You're never in something, you're always on, like you're not on, you're... Or you're not at something, you're on it. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Sounds good. Well, thanks for doing this, bud. I hope you get to enjoy being outside.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it's been great. Freedom. Except this week is pretty rainy, so it's like, it's a little, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, it's rainy.
It'll all come.
For me as well. Like, I'm over in Austria, and it's rainy here for me.
Oh yeah, that
yesterday was like the last day of like a training block, and so I knew the rain was coming. So I was just gonna like, all right, empty the tank tomorrow,
perfect.
And then just chill the day. And when I like woke, I'm living in a barn, and I had to like go to get like some firewood this morning to like warm up the place. And I'm just like walking out the door, and there's just like snow on the trees all around me. I'm like, oh, good call there, Jack.
Oh boy,
rest day today.
Yeah, time that to the T. Oh man.
Awesome, buddy. Man. Well, great chatting with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, cool. All
right, it was real good to catch up.
All right.
Yeah, talk to you soon. I'll be following your adventures.
Yeah. Well, I want to see more of yours too, buddy. I love following your social media.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of.
I'll get some content out there.
Okay. Sick, buddy. All right.
All right, man.
What a great guy. Sep is such a good bud. I mean, I've had the pleasure of racing with him since he started on the road, but what's amazing about Sep is that he just hasn't changed at all, and he's still the same super laid-back guy, even though now he has just kept going up and up and up and is now one of the best riders in the world. Still loves to get out on his mountain bike and still just a really cool guy from Colorado. Super humble, really well-spoken, always plenty of good fun stories. And he's got a great social media feed to follow. It's just him having fun out there. Just someone who loves riding his bike and is the type of guy that you know he's going to be riding his bike in his old age, just like the Ned Overins and whatnot. Sep will probably be joining that club. If you enjoyed this episode, another really great show to listen to is The Adventure Stash with Payson McKelvin. They recorded a really cool episode with Sep, Howard Grotz, and Chris Blevins. I know I've listened to that episode a few times. Specifically, I can remember listening to it on repeat, actually, out cross-country skiing a couple times this past winter. I don't know Payson at all, but I've really enjoyed his show. And if you enjoyed listening to Sep here, I think that'd be a good one to do. Other than that, enjoy your day, everybody. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can find a lot more of the content I produce at jackburkcycling.com. It's my personal website, but I put a lot of these podcasts and a lot of this content up in a much more raw format weeks before they show up here on this feed. So you can always find more stories, more podcasts, everything like that under the stories section of my website, as far as all kinds of other stuff. Or you can follow me on Instagram at JackFlash66. It's my high school nickname. I'm not changing it now. It's been there for too long. And I mean, you don't have to rate or review or share or do anything with this podcast. I know everyone else likes to ask for that. And I mean, I just enjoy having these conversations with my buds and I like sharing them with other people. So, I mean, if you want to do that, that's cool. But other than that, I just hope you guys are all having, guys and girls are having a sweet time outside. I hope you get to enjoy whatever your favorite sport is or time spent outside, walking your dog, hiking up a mountain, hanging out by the beach, or maybe just kicking by the fire and making a cup of joe. I hope you get to have a sweet day and I hope you enjoyed these stories. All right. Well, hopefully I'll be able to bring you some more cool stories in the future and I hope you keep following along. Cheers, everybody.